This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's episode 90. I am really hoping that this is not going to be an extraordinarily exciting podcast. I've had a little rattle in the front of my car for the last couple of days, and I called my mechanic, and the soonest they could get me in was this coming Friday. It seemed to get a little worse with the cold, and then it hasn't been getting worse, and so I've just kind of been praying as I go back and forth to work that my wheel is not going to fall off. You're probably going to be able to hear it once I get up to speed. It's kind of like a little... Over in the passenger front side, I think it is. When I slow way down, you can kind of hear something going... So I'm not really sure. I don't think it's tire noise. Maybe some kind of a wheel bearing or something. But we're going to get that taken care of tomorrow. But hopefully everything will be fine. I'm going to just kind of baby the car going home. I have a breakfast tomorrow morning. Baby the car going in. Get it over to the auto mechanic. We'll see. So, you know, you got to have a little excitement in your life. We'll see. Anyways, okay, so latest news. Tomorrow, after I drop my car off at the mechanic, I'm going to have my buddy, whom I have breakfast with, if we have breakfast tomorrow. Otherwise, I'll impose on my wonderful son-in-law. But if we have breakfast tomorrow, I'm going to have him, if he has time, follow me over to the mechanic and then deliver me down to U-Haul, and I'm going to rent a truck for the day and use that for my transportation, because supposedly, by about mid-morning, we will have finished up the first build of product. And it's a small build, because I originally had intended to use some of the product that had been built, I think I mentioned it last week. It had been talked about the stuff that was built last week and the fact that the injection molder was going to, you know, break out the flashing in those. He did that all by hand. I had discovered, I really feel bad. This poor injection molder has been working so hard. I discovered over the weekend that the ones that he had run towards the end of that run where everything was all packed out and it really looked nice, they wobbled a little. I don't think I mentioned this last week. Sometimes the days all blur together. That they wobbled a little bit. And so I went ahead and checked the 600 that had already been delivered over to Springfield Workshop, who was doing the assembling for me. And sure enough, those wobbled too. And so I talked to the injector molder about that on Monday, and he looked into it and figured out that on another spot we're having a little bit of flashing, and so he figured out what he needed to do, and it actually involved some handwork for him. But, you know, as soon as he started doing that, then they were rock solid. They were beautiful. I actually, when was it, on Tuesday, ran over there on Tuesday and picked one up. And, you know, there are no, I mean, greatly, greatly reduced shrink marks. The thing sits solid. The actual flashing, greatly, greatly reduced. I mean, it was, they were good. I was happy. It was like, yay, we've gotten there. And so I called the injection molder first thing on Wednesday morning, because, you know, if you call people over and over and over and over and over with problems, then when the problems get resolved, you need to call them back. And so I called, and I always say, this is Phil Farron of Vane Works. Hey, Phil, how are you doing? And I said, well, it's beautiful, Bob. And he went, oh, you like it? I said, yes, it's good. Everything looks good. Oh, he said, that's good to hear. I said, I know, this has been a long road for you. So I thanked him for all his hard work. And we're going to get the rest of them built over the next several days here. He's going to run the rest of them over the next several days here. And then I'm going to go down, get him a check, get squared up with him. And then the next step, of course, was to get Springfield Workshop working on them. And I had the 600 that wobbled a little bit, and, you know. But I thought, well, better to go ahead and have them do some of those, not a ton, but just some of them. And that way they can kind of work out their process. So I had gotten that started and put in the order, and therefore got scheduled in with their schedule. And they started running those last night. And then since we had extra product come in this morning, I went ahead and had them cut over to the new product as soon as it got there. And so then they built out the rest of them on the new product. And those will actually be sellable. The ones they did for the test run, I'm just going to put them back for emergencies. You know, if I completely run out of product, then I may use those. Although, I will probably just end up tearing those apart and reusing the pieces, which is fine. You know, sometimes in business you have some sunk costs, because especially when you're getting started, you're scrambling around. You're trying to find a rhythm. You're trying to find the right things to do, that kind of stuff. And often you wander down the wrong path. And in those cases, the sooner you recognize that it's the wrong path, I'm going to unzip my coat here because the car is starting to warm up. Sooner you recognize that it's the wrong path, the better. And once you recognize that it's the wrong path and you get that corrected, you really shouldn't be spending a lot of time berating the fact that you have a sunk cost. You just treat it as a sunk cost and you move on, because it's kind of just a waste of time to sit around and go, oh, I can't believe I spent that, you know, $500 on that. Okay, well, yeah, it probably would have been better if you didn't, but it's spent and it's done, so you just move on. So there will be some sunk cost in this, but that's the way it is when things start up, and you should really kind of just plan for that when you're working on a business adventure, and don't require that your finances are really, really tight, that everything's going to work out perfect, because it never does. So just count on the fact that you need some extra slop in your finances to be able to sustain some of those hits. One thing I'm going to do tomorrow after I pick everything up, of course, is I'm going to take it back out to the house and unload it, stick it in my basement. This is going to be interesting, this first portion of this, because the plan eventually is to move everything up to Amazon. If these things actually start selling and I get my 4,000 orders and get myself all paid back, then the next step would be to go ahead and move up to Amazon and just have them do the fulfillment, them do the shipping. But that's going to cost me several dollars per order, and will cut into my profit margin, and I want to get myself paid back first. So that means potentially I'm going to be having 4,000 boxes in my basement for some period of time, and I'm going to be doing those in waves. So I've already allocated some space in my office that's going to chew up I figured it was going to be a 6-foot by 7-foot by 7-foot square in my office. Well, cube in my office. And so at least for this portion of it, it means there's going to be some extra cost, because I have to rent a U-Haul truck, have to go get the pallets, bring them back to my house, break them apart, carry all this stuff down to my office, and then I'll do the fulfillment out of my office. So, you know, it won't be ideal for the starting up phase, but, you know, that's okay. It's okay. It's an adventure. So anyways, we are finally, this week, finally, I can start to see some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the product being assembled. I do have to check tomorrow. That's still an outstanding. once I pick them all up, I got to get them home. I got to do some quality assurance checks on them. Hopefully, the assembly is going to all be fine. You know, if it isn't, I'm not down that much money with these assembled pieces. And, you know, you can kind of treat that as a sunk cost and then go back and see if you can make the corrections on the rest of them. But I'm rapidly approaching the point where all the major pieces of this process have been tested out. And so, you know, that's cool. I mean, there's still spots where because you're running so many, it's inevitable that you're going to have some problems in there somewhere. But I think the approach to take there is understanding that you have to go with the scalable approach, as opposed to I could take all of them home, you know, not have them seal the boxes, take all of them home, tear them all apart, make sure they all look good, put them all back together and seal the boxes. But the amount of time that's involved in that discounts it as a desired approach. And so the other approach is to just have them go ahead and pack them all up, seal the boxes, do some quality assurance checks, pick 3, 4, 5 of them randomly, pull them out, see what they look like. If they're close, then you just go ahead and start shipping them. And if someone has a problem, then you just deal with those problems as they come. And you keep track of them to figure out what the percentages are. And if you're really getting a big percentage, you know, in the load, some kind of problem there, then you have to go back and fix that. But I say all that to say I'm close now. I'm close. So pretty soon here, we're actually going up for real. And I may go ahead and do a soft start and just sneak it out and communicate with the people who have said that they would, you know, that have reserved ahead of time, just communicate with them. Go ahead and ship to them to get my shipping stuff all worked out, and then maybe open for business the week between Christmas and New Year's, sometime in there, and then maybe try to get the tech bloggers and that kind of thing interested the first week of January. So that's kind of the plan at this point. Anyway, so that's a lot of catching up as to what's going on with the VaneWorks stand. This really will be very interesting to see what comes out of this. This week, I've had a couple of conversations with friends, and we've had some very nice time sharing together. And one of the things that's been kind of going around in the back of my head this week is this whole idea again of why people work, what is the true nature of the world, what decisions do you make in life in terms of your work experience, what do you pursue, you know, the epic, the adventure, all that kind of stuff all smashed around and bundled up. And I was remembering this week back to a time when I was working on the music notation software, and there had been a millionaire businessman who had come in. He actually had his own plane, got a chance to ride on that. That was pretty cool. He had come in to help market the music notation software that I was working on. And we had had some interesting conversations. One time, I went to the airport here in Springfield, and his plane landed, and they picked me up, and he flew me up to Minneapolis, and we got a chance to talk as we were going up there, and had some, it was very, very interesting. Well, as we started getting closer to releasing that product, and there was a lot of buzz about the product, and it looked like the product was really going to go big, big. And it went pretty big when it went. It didn't quite go as big as this millionaire businessman thought it was going to go, but it went pretty big. He turned to my buddy, who was my business partner at the time. And I was up on, we were doing a presentation something. I was up on stage talking, and I don't even remember where we were. But he turned to my buddy, and he said, what do you intend to do with your life? And my buddy kind of looked at him and said, what? And he said, well, you know, the way this thing's going, he said, pretty soon here, you're not going to have to worry about money anymore. So what are you going to do? He pointed down to me. He said, you know, Phil, he's always going to have something to do. He's always going to have something to invent or build or whatever, he said. But what about you? What are you going to do? That was a kind of an interesting question. And my buddy related it to me later as just a kind of, huh. I don't know that we spent any long amount of time talking about what he was going to do. But it was an interesting question. This morning, as I was getting ready to head into work, my wife has been recording the Oprah show, since it's Oprah's last season. She's been recording it on our media center, and so while I was making my breakfast and stuff, I popped in and pulled up the recording. And this particular show, Oprah had on three people, Tony Danza, Serena Williams, and Angie Hollywood star, don't know, anyways. And it was a show about their three dream jobs. And it was pretty interesting. I mean, here you've got Tony Danza, who was a star. It had been in several hit series and has done well. Doesn't really need probably to do anything, but he had always kind of wanted to be a teacher. So he had actually gone back to school to get his teaching license. And they had done like a little reality show about him going and teaching, because he really did want to be a teacher. And so that was kind of interesting. And Serena Williams, actually her dream job was to be a manicurist, because she always had loved that. And with Angie Dickinson, I don't know. Anyways, she's played on a lot of cop shows, and she was really, really interested in being a coroner and being someone who works with forensic science. And so there was some department of forensic science that actually agreed to allow her to come in and go through some of the training, and agreed to allow cameras in, which they normally don't. Excuse me, I'm right at the last dregs of this cold I had last week. At least I'm not blowing my nose. And it was fascinating, because here's these people who have been very successful, who certainly have all the money they need, and yet there's something within them. There's a curiosity, there's a desire to do something else. And I realize that some of that may be just flesh, but some of it, I think, is really genuine. They have a desire to try some things. And through this week, I've been thinking about a question. And I've asked some people it. And the question is, if you won the lottery and you had $100 million to your name, what would you do? Not what would you consume? I.e., well, I'd run out and I'd buy this and I'd buy this, and then I'd buy my parents a home, and then I'd give charity, and none of that. Not what would you give, not what would you consume, not what would you buy, but what would you do? What are the things in your life, I'm getting my mail, that hold sufficient interest for you that you would do them no matter... Oh, I have a parcel. Huh. Sarah, I don't know who that is. Maybe my beloved ordered something. Anyways, what are the things in your life that hold sufficient interest for you that if you didn't have to work, you would still want to try them? You would still want to do them? Because the lottery question, I think, is an interesting way to start dividing people's motives between what they're doing just because they're trying to get some money and what they're doing because it's something really of great interest to them. Because as I've said before, I work for a corporation that has hundreds and hundreds of employees. And if any one of them won the lottery, I'm backing into my garage. I doubt that they would come into work the next day. Even though when you talk to them, they'll tell you, oh, I love my job. You know, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's great. And yada, 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 yada. But, you know, if they won the lottery, would they actually stay? Or would they do something else? And I think the answer is a lot of them would do something else. And the question is, after you got over all the screaming and hollering about winning the lottery, what would you do? You know, for me, there's really one final answer, and that is I would go write. Now, I would probably write during the day, and then in the evenings, maybe I would go invent some stuff just for the fun of doing that. But primarily, it would be writing, because that's really what I want to do in life. There's not really any right or wrong answer to this. It just may be a way to think about what's in your life and think about the things that you're really passionate about. And if you're not doing those things, then the question is, why aren't you doing them? And if it's just because it's a really expensive hobby, like I talked to a friend this week, and he just loves flying. Loves it, period, loves it. And he might be a pilot today if it wasn't so demanding on a person's home life. It might be a commercial pilot. And so the reason that he's not a commercial pilot is a very good reason, that he wants to be married and have children, because those are epics as well. But he loves flying. I mean, it's in his blood. And so he's exploring ways to, you know, get a big screen, and he likes Microsoft Flight Simulator and uses it a lot. And so he's exploring ways to kind of indulge in that love as well, because it's something that's at his core. And I guess I would encourage you today, if it's really true that you won the lottery and there is something that you would do, like, are you fascinated by architecture? And so you'd like to go to Europe. My cousin-in-law, I don't know if she's still doing it, but she would save up for 2 years. She'd work at her job and save and save and save and save until she could afford every 2 years to take a trip to Europe, because that's what she loved to do. She loved architecture. She loved seeing the buildings, being around the buildings. Doing the things that you love to do adds a dimension to your life that you're not going to find any other way. And so if there is something that some mode of creativity, some mode of invention, something like learning a language, learning to play an instrument, something like that, that you've always thought, man, I'd love to do that. I would just encourage you, find a way to make it happen. You know, save up some money. Set a little aside. Have it as a goal that you can, you know, start dabbling in that. Because right now, for instance, I miss writing. Oh, I want to get back to writing. But, you know, that's okay. I'm on another kind of adventure. And it's been a great adventure. But I'm really glad to see it starting to come to the close of at least one phase. Because I'm ready to get back to writing. Because if I won the lottery, that's what I'd do. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.